It's 8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KBCW Local News Hour. Well, this week we have been introducing you to the three Republican candidates who will be on the June 28th primary ballot, the winner of whom will be moving on to the November ballot to face the winner of the Democratic primary for the open seat in Senate District 26, of which Park City and Wasatch County are part of. Ron Winterton is a resident of the Uinta Basin. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning to you, Ron. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
So you join Jack Rubin of Park City and Brian Gorm from Vernal in this three-way primary race under the Republican ticket. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to run for office.
Well, I'm a Duchesne County Commissioner, and so I've been in county government now. I'm in my 10th year, and I entered it because I was frustrated with my local leaders and letting things just slide. And so I signed up and ran for commissioner 10 years ago. And I've been very successful in getting things done and moving the needle in areas where it's really necessary. I born and raised there in the Uinta Basin. I started and ran my own trucking company for over 25 years. And, you know, it frustrates me when I look at the government and see that, you know, if it was a private business, it would probably be run different. And so I've taken that approach to it. And in the past 10 years, we've not raised taxes in my county. We've been able to do what we needed to do and live within the means. So I'm very conservative. I've used those conservative business values that I have to be successful in that. I look at myself as a guy that collaborates and gets people together to resolve issues. And so I just see that this Senate seat, when Senator Van Castel announced he was retiring, we were looking at the candidates as leaders there in the basin. And one of the biggest concerns we had is that we're going to replace a 12-year veteran in the Senate, and the ones running had no government experience. That's not a bad thing, but if you're trying to do that, right now I look at it, we've got a lot of important issues that are on the table. They're on a train going down the tracks, and we don't have time to find a new engineer to take over the reins. And I feel like that with my background and knowledge, I can successfully do that. And those things that are on the plate locally, I can help them move that forward. I have years and years of experience. My county in 2014 was the fastest growing county in the nation of its size. And then when the oil boom dropped and the price of oil dropped, we went from less than 2% unemployment to up to 10% in unemployment. So that was another challenge. And I feel like the experience I have will help all of District 26. I know we're experiencing a lot of growth in Wasatch and Summit counties. And I think I bring some value to the table for that experience. So
we've got two guys from the Uinta Basin, one from the west side of the district. Any concern that you're splitting the vote here?
People may say that, but I actually was encouraged by the local leaders. I had the county commission in Uinta County come out and ask me if I wouldn't consider it. And I said I would only consider it if it was unified support. And I called Wasatch County Council, and I got the nod from them. And then finally, all of them said, yes, we will support you. And so that's basically why I entered the race, is because we all see that experience is necessary. And a senator, you know, is only effective as his communicating skills will allow him, or if he has 14 other senators that see the same way he does.
Yeah. Well,
and then you got to turn.
Following the state convention, since Brian Gorm received most of the votes from delegates there, has anyone since put pressure on you to drop out?
No, and you know, that's, to me, that's a misconception. you look at a lot of the races that took place at the state convention, 47 to 51 is not a clear cut. Somebody won. I mean, that was pretty well a split vote. There's a lot of races that are very similar, whether you look at Mitt Romney and the other guy. I mean, they're basically the same thing. Was somebody clearly the winner? It wasn't 60%, so I'm not feeling any pressure as far as that goes. I welcome debate and conversation because, once again, I think that I have 10 years. If people want to know where I stand on issues, they can go and look at how I've conducted business in my own county, the projects I've been able to move forward. A lot of times people say, you got to think outside of the box. You got to have new ideas. Well, sometimes the answer's in the box. We've just not stirred it around or had the right people looking inside. So I won't say that I don't have new ideas. I have been very successful in bringing people together and talking about projects and how can we accommodate that.
What do you
I
think?
I have relationships with UDOT that are very productive.
What do you think the biggest issues are in this campaign?
It varies from throughout the district. I mean, Park City has, you know, their growing pains. How do you keep open space and protect the environment at the same time? And the growth that people want to be there. Park City is unique, and they offer a lot to the state. And Wasatch is going through growing pains, and they want to keep their open space. Transportation issues throughout the whole Highway 40 corridor, it poses a lot of it can be fixed with money. It's just where on the list, on the priority list, does that fall? And how are we going to accomplish it? We have to have a plan, you know, 10 and 20 years. Where do we want to be? And then out in the basin, we would love to diversify the economy there.
So
because of public lands, I mean, we don't own the majority of the land out there. So our taxing ability to do other things is very limited. And so oil and gas is what's in the ground there. We need to help promote that, but yet look for other ways to diversify. I say in the past few years, I mean, I was one of the four commissioners that helped create the 7-County Infrastructure Coalition, which basically was the 7 counties on the eastern side of Utah. We have a lot of projects that cross county lines. And as commissioners, we are limited to the boundaries of our county. And when we do these projects, we need help. The state has been very reluctant to step in. So we created that. And we're right in the middle of doing a rail study. We did one four years ago with UDOT. And we were trying to get a rail into Price. And after we pushed that project to its limit, they said it'd take 8 years. We were completed in that in just a little over 18 months, and then it was just deemed too expensive to do. So now we're looking into going into Colorado. And at the time the first study was done, we were trying to help Utah economy, and so we just kind of wiped going east out. So right now it's looking very, very good for that rail spur to come into the basin from there, which, you know, gives us a lot of options. So I have been involved in most of the studies. You don't know what you don't know until you know that. And so I believe in moving forward with studies to be able to make good decisions instead of just guess at it. So
hey, I want to talk.
That's where I come from.
Okay, so some of the issues you brought up, I want to get your response on. I mean, when you talk about Park City and Wasatch County wanting to protect open space, there was basically state lawmakers did away with the Leroy McAllister, something like that, an open space funding, that it was an opportunity for communities to receive some of this funding and leverage it in terms of acquiring open space, not condemning it, but, you know, buying it outright. How would you have voted on that? Would you have worked then to protect that open space funding?
I think the local community should have a say in that, and that should be an option for them. I don't think that the state should be trying to fix everybody's problem and say that one bill fits the whole state, because you should have options. I think we need to protect our ag community. I think that sometimes the legislature has overstepped their bounds.
So you would have fought to preserve that funding. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, I would have.
Yeah. You also mentioned, you know, about, of course, in the Uinta Basin, all of the oil and gas in the ground. You also have a lot of sun and wind in the sky. So when you think about the increasing unemployment rates, I mean, what about that? I mean, there are certainly alternative energies out there that you could tap into, no?
Yes, and just as I got into the commission in 2009, they had just finished a wind study out there, and they say we have a lot of wind, but after the study and that, we didn't have enough continuous wind to generate it day in and day out. We have certain times of the year that we could be very successful at that. It's not profitable. We do have an investor right now that is looking at our county that he owns some land that he wants to put in a solar farm. And so we're just in the early stages of helping them jump through the hoops. We have to find an outlet to sell the electricity to. And so they're in that process right now. They've been talking to Pacific Corp, Rocky Mountain. Our local provider out there is Moon Lake Electric, and they're all regulated, and so we have to find an outside source to get that to, and then lines to put it on. Our lines out there, they probably reach their capacity, and so, again, we're looking at all these options. I'm not closing the door on alternative green energy at all. I think that there's a place for that, and if they have to be subsidized by the fossil fuels, then maybe they're not ready, but there is a place for them.
Also, I just wanted to get you on the record in terms of your position then on the possible public lands lawsuit that the state attorney general may pursue, again, using tax dollars to take back what some think is state land from the federal government. How do you feel about that?
Well, the way I understand it, the Enabling Act, when Utah became a state in statehood, every other state east of the Mississippi was given the land that was in their boundaries. When we get out west, they did not do that. I think the federal government needs to turn the land over to the state for management purposes, for ownership, and then as locals, we decide how to manage that land. I think that we manage it much better being here than they do in Washington, D.C. So I'm in favor of getting the land turned over to the state. How that is accomplished, I think that if the state were successful, then everybody would agree that it was worth using tax dollars for. Is there other options? I don't know how far they have explored that, but the federal government needs to treat all of the 50 states the same as they did the original 13 colonies, and as they kept adding to it, they all got their land. We did not.
Also wanted to ask you about an issue that came up this year in the legislature, and it was a bill. Basically, Park City, as you probably are aware, you know, instituted a ban on plastic bags, single-use plastic bags. Then we saw a state lawmaker challenge that and wanted to ban that ban. Senator Van Tassel voted in favor of that legislation, basically usurping Park City's authority. How would you have voted on that?
I'm on the Duchesne County Wasatch Landfill Board, plastic bags are a real problem in our landfill with the wind and that. So I think it's a local issue. I think the state has no business regulating the outcome in local communities. You should be able to decide whether or not you want to go that way. So I probably would not be supportive of the state dictating plastic bags.
Yeah. And many years ago, Park City School District instituted impact fees on new growth to help pay for the changes on the impacts on the school district. Once again, the state legislature coming in and negating that. I mean, so how far does that local control go?
Well, again, I mean, if I understand the law right, impact fees can only be imposed if there is truly an impact. And if they have their plan and they see the growth coming, I think it's very appropriate for them to be assessing that. And again, the state should not be dictating what happens locally. So your local school district, if they have their build-out plan or their growth rate projections, if they're going to need it, they should be the ones to say, okay, how are we going to meet these needs? And if it's through impact fees or some kind of assessment, the RDAs, I mean, we work with those things so that we have those projections and the money coming in the future.
We had double-digit growth. The end of the story, though, was that we had to refund all of those impact fees that were collected, just so you know. Hey, anything else? Because I'm out of time, Ron. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
Well, I appreciate this opportunity, and I just think that, you know, all of the candidates seem to be on the same page. Basically, I bring to the table my years of experience of actually being in government, understanding it. And one of the things I found, I was a truck driver and I owned my own business. I jumped into the arena and didn't know the first thing about it. The learning curve was huge. I mean, 2 years it took me to feel like I was comfortable enough to be speaking for the county. And I see the Senate job basically the same way. I don't believe the learning curve is as heavy for me as others because I have established relationships. I have the knowledge. I spend many hours every day preparing and being knowledgeable on the issues facing us. I do not speak unless I have researched or have facts. That's the only way I'll make a decision. I need to have facts. I do not do it off emotions. And so I feel I'm a good candidate.
Okay. Ron, I've got to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
You bet.
8:34, good morning. Well, Park City and Summit County Council members have been attending the mid-year conference hosted by the Utah League of Cities and Towns and the Utah Association of Counties. One of those who attended is Summit County Council member Glenn Wright. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the Utah Association of Counties, known as UAC, started Tuesday night and then ran through yesterday. Utah League of Cities and Towns, I think, started Wednesday night, and then running through to today. So in addition to you and County Council Member Kim Carson, Deputy County Manager Jana Young, who else went with you?
Well, let's see. We had Kent Jones was there, Marianne Trussell, Corey Forsling, and several other deputies were there.
Yeah, it looks like the schedule, contain something for everyone. I mean, in addition to council members and managers,
yes.
Treasurers, IT, personnel.
Each department has its own kind of agenda for the 3 days.
Yeah. So what did you get out of it?
I got, I think there's a lot of interesting things that were on the commissioner and council member agenda. The first thing we talked about was public lands, which with a lot of the rural counties is a very big continuing item. And this was my fourth UAC meeting, and I've seen a change in attitude on public lands in terms of emphasis. My first couple of meetings, the whole thrust was we've got to take all the federal lands back from the Fed and have them state administered. Didn't hear that much of that this time, and I think it's a healthy change. We talk more specifically about specific issues. And we talked last week about forest health here. Forest health is a big issue statewide. Range health is an issue statewide. Wild horses are a problem in certain areas. there are a lot of things we can do with public lands that don't require us to essentially fight the federal government, but it's better for us to work with them to solve individual problems. Forest health, range health, and watershed health really are tied together, and they're vital to the state. So I saw a much healthier attitude on that, that I think we can make joint progress. Now, we're certainly not in complete agreement on all of the public lands issues with all the other rural counties, but I've seen a lot of issues where we come together on.
You also got a briefing with regard to the transportation bill that was signed into law this past legislative session, with details on the local option sales tax modification. So any changes
that is
to us there?
That's a big issue, and it's actually also related to the Our Schools Now issue. I think the legislature has seen that they, over decades, have not raised gas taxes to support transportation, so they've stolen money from sales taxes, which has stolen money from education. The legislature, I think they finally realized that they need to do something in that area, but in an election year, they didn't want to raise taxes themselves. So they've given local options for all of the counties that we can use. One of them, if we raise that particular quarter cent tax before July 1st, we have more flexibility in how we can use that money. So we'll be having some discussions on that, I believe, in the next few weeks. But it's also related to some of the things that are happening with Our Schools Now in terms of a referendum on a 10-cent increase in the gasoline tax statewide that would then shift money towards education, but also towards B and C roads. I think the fact that the legislature has shown a lot of political cowardice in terms of raising the taxes themselves, they want to put the burden out on someone else, actually has some positive impact, because we'll have more control if we have more control over those tax monies ourselves, we'll be able to do what we want with more flexibility locally. They have threatened under the transportation taxes that if we don't do it, they may raise those taxes themselves and then use them as they wish. So it's really incumbent on all of the counties to take these options and use them to our best advantage.
Wednesday was focused on affordable housing and community reinvestment areas. How would that help? And what did you learn out of there? Because I guess
the community reinvestment
areas
were really
mechanisms.
Interesting. I think that's something we're going to have to discuss also. It's tax increment financing. And there are several infrastructure projects in the county where we might be able to use tax increment funding to build either sewer, water, road infrastructure on the east side, or to improve the traffic flow around Kimball Junction and provide for more remote parking. So those are things that I think we will be investigating. The affordable housing issue was a new topic for UAC and for a lot of the counties. I think we're one of the few counties that are really active in the affordable housing area, and some of the issues they talked about we're already working on here and some of the techniques.
Yeah, I was going to get back to that, the tax increment finance. I mean, Wasatch County's doing, that's what it's doing with the whole Mayflower infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're talking like 20, 25 years.
Yeah. The only RDA we have right now is in Park City, and Park City's using that money to build affordable housing. I think the county would probably take a different tact on that, but it looks like it's a method that we seriously need to consider.
All right. Let's see. Who does UAC represent?
The counties.
Just the counties.
Yes.
They don't represent residents.
No, it's really a county support organization.
And the reason I wanted to ask you was because I had just been made aware of an issue that came up in the state legislature, and it had to do with initiative petitions.
Mm-hmm.
UAC basically saying it supported the bill that would increase the number of signatures in a district from 20% to 35%. These signatures have to be collected in 45 days in order to change a decision by, say, the county council, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought that was kind of interesting that they're making it more difficult for constituents to disagree with a county council decision.
That's true. And an example we saw of that several years ago, I'm not sure how many years ago now, but you may remember the discussion that the council had with some petitioners about service area 6 taxes probably 5 or 6 years ago. That really threw a monkey wrench into the budgeting for fixing roads in the service area 6 area, which is mostly the Snyderville Basin. There were people from around the county who weren't affected by that particular tax increase but had a visceral disagreement with raising taxes for any reason. And they really threw a monkey wrench into the budgeting process for about a year. After they came forward with their petition, the people from Service Area 6 came out and spoke to the council and said, look, our taxes for this district haven't been raised in about 30 years. We need our roads fixed, so go ahead and do it. I think what that policy will do is it will tamp down the fringe elements that can try to throw a monkey wrench into county government.
So what happens from here? I mean, you guys kind of divided and conquered while you were at and somebody listening to something else,
yeah.
And then you come back and bring those issues
exactly.
To the council?
Yesterday, Kim and I were in a lot of common meetings, but yesterday we had different breakout sessions that were for both cities and counties. I attended the session on land use, and Kim did the one on rural economic growth. So I haven't had a chance to really talk to her about what she found out at that one. I discovered some very interesting ideas about land use rules that I'll be taking to my counterparts on. Maybe we need to make a few tweaks to our code.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Glenn, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome, Leslie.
844, good morning. Well, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and in the studio with a rundown of some of the many events planned for the month of May throughout Summit County, I have the Executive Director of Connect Summit County, Shauna Wiest, along with Park City High School student Faith Staley, who has helped organize one of the student events, Ask Me Anything Night. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Faith, let's just quickly start with you. Who is asking whom anything?
So the event is planned by a bunch of different clubs at the high school, including the Gay Straight Alliance, the LIA, the Mental, the Impact Board, and it's for parents and community members to come and ask questions about mental health, LGBT issues, different intersectional problems, and sort of to open the discussion about how mental health relates in that sort of intersectional way.
Okay, that's happening when and where?
On May 2nd at 5:30 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium.
Okay, so you've got student speakers. So the parents will be asking the student speakers?
Yes, we have a panel of students from the boards of the different clubs, as well as moderator Mary Krista Smith and two counselors from the high school who will be on the panel.
Okay. And the kids are committed then to being honest with the parents?
Yes.
Right? Because sometimes that dialogue's hard to start.
Right.
All right. So parents and kids are welcome to participate in that?
Yes.
Or is it just for adults?
Kids as well.
All right. So can you talk to us a little bit of what some of the topics might include?
So we're going to be hosting TED Talks as well that were given by the students this past year to sort of open the dialogues. So I think it'll be a lot of things about how mental health relates to varying other student groups like LIA or GSA. I mean, I'm the president of GSA, so I know LGBT students are at a higher risk for mental illnesses and things like that. So sort of, and we're going to have all of the clubs speaking on the panel at all times, so we can always have that different sort of cross viewpoints.
Okay. And then Shauna, Connect getting ready to launch its third annual Mental Health Awareness Month. What's your goal in planning this month-long event?
Well, our goal, as it has been for the last 2 years, is to open up the dialogue around mental health. Our theme this year is stigma-free, how it should be. And we want people to come out and be very open about the mental health issues. I think Faith made an excellent point that with the TED Talks, we have TED Talks on drug abuse, we have TED Talks on mental illness. It really opens up the conversation and enlightens people to what is going on in this community. So that is our goal, is to enlighten the communities around mental health.
How many different events do you have planned?
We have approximately 20 different events, which includes our school events. We launch on May 1st with a wonderful program with mindfulness expert Rebecca Brenner. We're going to be showing the documentary Mindfulness Goes Mainstream. And then right after that, we'll go right into a panel discussion where she will give some mental wellness tips, how to meditate, how to be mindful, which I think really sets us up for the month.
Okay. What are some of the other topics that you hope to get into during the
month? Well, we're going to have a wonderful TBI, traumatic brain injury / concussion event on May 16th at 6 p.m. where we'll have Alex Schlope, who was an X Games and freestyle world championship gold medalist, and several providers in town who deal with concussions. This is a really special event because it's the rule rather than the exception that you're going to have mental health challenges if you've had some kind of traumatic brain injury. So that event's coming up. We are so fortunate to have Admiral James Winfield and his wife Mary on Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. at the Blair Education and Conference Center at Park City Hospital. The Admiral and his wife lost their son, Jonathan, to an opiate overdose in September 2017. And what's really unique about this program is that he was the former vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Barack Obama. He also served Colin Powell. And although he commanded the most powerful military in the world, he was powerless in saving his son from an opiate overdose. So this really goes to normalizing the conversation around mental health. It can happen to anyone.
All right. You also have Anna, I don't know how to say her name, Humayun?
Yes, Anna Humayun will be coming this week or the following week, May 3rd, Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. She is an international social media wellness expert. She will be speaking at Ecker Hill Middle School as well as South Summit Middle School in Camas. But her big community event will be on Thursday night at the Jim Santee Auditorium. And she is outstanding. She talks about the stress that young people are experiencing with social media and ways that parents can help their children succeed in this new media world.
Okay. And let's see, you've got another kind of world-class speaker coming, Dr. Nicole Sharon.
Oh, yes, Leslie. She's amazing. So Dr. Nicole Sharon is a neuroscientist from the Palex Foundation in Canada. And they... the Palex Foundation funded $117 million in grant funding to look at the brain, look at the brain architecture to determine why some people are more vulnerable to mental illness and addiction than others. And we're actually going to play a game. This is on May 22nd at 6:30 p.m. again at the hospital. We're going to play the brain architecture game, and it's a fascinating game where you learn what makes a brain strong, what makes a brain weak. And this event actually is for county council members, providers, people who work at the jail, law enforcement, because it's really a shift in thinking as to how a county can best help people afflicted with mental illness or substance abuse issues.
Okay. Let me see. Anything else that you wanted to highlight?
Yes. Our Brainstorm Film Festival, which includes a play this year. We're going to be having, I believe, five films this year, and then also a play about Alzheimer's caregivers. And that's going to be on May 22nd at noon at the Jim Santee Auditorium. But we have some amazing films also. We are partnering with the film series to show Mind Game, and we are having the person who's the focus of that movie, Shamiqua Holtzclaw, come and speak. She was the female Michael Jordan. She was the number one draft pick for basketball, but she suffered really extreme mental health issues. So there's a film called Mind Game that's narrated by Glenn Close that chronicles Shamiqua's life and how fortunate we are then to have Shamiqua as a panelist for that evening. And Ben Belknap, who is the superintendent for mental wellness for the school district, will be moderating that event.
Great. So are all of these events then free?
All of our events, thanks to our wonderful donors, are free and open to the public. People can look at the calendar by going to our website, which is connectsummitcounty.org. The calendar is right on our website. They can also click on calendar of events to see more detail for each program. We have programs for every age group, so I really encourage people to look through that calendar, circle a few items that are of interest to you, and come on out and bring a friend. Bring a friend. And I mean, I am very proud that Connect is able to offer this programming. So we look forward to seeing people there.
All right. And it sounds like you've got some of these speakers also going into the schools.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Yeah. And then so is it just donations that help pay for all of this to happen?
Really, it is greatly donations. People are very generous in this town. People like our programming, they see what we're doing, and they often will come up to me and say, how can I help? Which I think is, I've never experienced anything like that. So we are very appreciative of our donors.
So as we mentioned, it's the third year that we've been recognizing Mental Health Awareness Month. I mean, have you noticed any changes in the community as a result?
I have. I've noticed that people are more willing to speak about the issues. They want to be informed about where they can take their loved one, their colleague, or a friend. They're not reticent about speaking up about certain issues like they used to be. And I really feel that we're able to uncover the resources that are available in this community and help navigate people in the right direction. So yes, I definitely see a change for the better.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just come on out, bring a friend. We launch May 1st with Rebecca Brenner and mindfulness. So okay. Thank you.
Shauna Wiest and Faith Staley, thanks for your time. Coming up next week, the Park City High School Gay and Straight Alliance will be hosting parent education classes. In the studio to tell us more about that, I have students and club members, Lane McKibben and Adam Herbst. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
So first tell us maybe what the Gay-Straight Alliance is and what you guys consider your mission to be.
So the Gay-Straight Alliance, we're a social club at Park City High School. What we do is make sure that, you know, people of the LGBTQ plus community inside of Park City High School feel accepted and happy and within our community. Because, you know, there's obviously been discrimination between or against people who are LGBTQ plus. So we want to make sure that those people are accepted within our high school, especially the youth.
Yeah. How many members do you have?
I think on paper we have like 200.
Wow.
Yeah, it's about 200 on paper, but we have probably between 60 to like 20 at each meeting.
Okay. And you meet how often?
Every other week on Mondays.
Okay. After school or?
Yeah, after school.
Okay. And everybody welcome.
Yes, anybody who wants to is welcome. It doesn't matter if they're gay, straight, lesbian, bi, transgender, anything.
Okay. And what are some of the topics that you take on at your meetings?
Most recently, we talked about queer theory, which is just kind of applying the values of LGBTQ plus community to different kind of structures and institutions within our society. And we had a guest speaker come in, Carrie from the University of Utah. Really, really cool. They teach queer theory at the University of Utah. We also go over some other topics, just kind of delving into like, you know, terms and things like that and how to apply said terms. We had lessons throughout the year to teach some of the people in GSA because, you know, a lot of people know those terms, you know, and know what they mean and know how to apply them properly. But we also don't want to assume that everyone knows what they mean. So we want to just teach as much as we can. And then if, you know, someone thought they knew what it meant and something like that, then we can clear up misconceptions. But we mostly do, well, we focus on, you know, the education of our peers, but also the acceptance of our peers. So Lane over here has been running our support group after meetings.
Yeah, so after meetings, we have a support group, and it's run by me. And I just, like, help people come to terms with who they are and like whatever they're struggling through. It doesn't even have to be LGBT related. And so I help people feel accepted. And then we also aren't just like focused on all the serious topics. We also have like socials and things like that to just have fun. And yeah.
Okay. So as I mentioned, you will be hosting some parent education classes. When and where is this going to happen?
They're going to be at Park City High School in Ms. Brzezicki's room. So that's just in the English hallway, first door on the right. They're going to be May 4th and 5th, so that's a Friday and a Saturday. The first one is going to be specifically on gender and sexuality, so we'll be teaching all of the terms about gender and sexuality and how to apply them. We'll also be teaching about spectrums and things like that and how to apply those terms onto the romantic sexual, or yeah, the romantic sexuality, gender, gender expression, and yeah, and romantic spectrums. And then our second class, May 5th, that's going to be how to accept someone who's coming out. These are specifically for parents because we know there's a lot of really cool parents here in Park City, but we also want to make sure that that they don't accidentally say something in, you know, offensive to their child, or we want to make sure that their child is, you know, as accepted as possible, and make sure that they know when the child comes out as something, that they know what that is, that they know what that identity is, so that they don't have to kind of question their child a little bit to ensure what they know what that means.
Yeah. So what time are these happening?
It's going to be from 5:30 to 7.
Each night?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then who's teaching the classes? You folks? Yeah. Students?
Yeah. Students are teaching the classes. Both Adam and I should be there along with other board members from the club. So that would include some seniors like our president, Faith Staley, and along with our board members in training who are current sophomores who will potentially be on the board next year.
Great. Have you had any kind of feedback? I mean, do you expect a good crowd?
Earlier on in the year, we had our first round of parent education, and those were three classes instead of two. But those ones we had a nice turnout. I don't think that it was as big as it possibly could be, but you know, hopefully we can get some more people there. And I'm sure that a lot of people's work schedules have kind of cleared up from the winter months. And you know, we're doing it a little bit later, so hopefully some more people can come along.
Okay.
Yeah.
May 4th and 5th, again, you said in the English, mm-hmm. the English wing of the high school. Is there a place people can get more information?
I think we have it on our Facebook page. And if it's not on our Facebook page, we can put that on there to make sure that everyone can see that. If people have children that are in the GSA, in the Park City GSA, they can ask their kids as well, because we're going to be advertising this at every meeting to make sure that, you know, kids kind of spread the word. Those are our main sources of information.
Okay. Adam, Lane, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.